guest here this morning. I want to say welcome. Thanks for coming to check us out. This morning's going to feel a little bit different, only because of some of the information that Dr. Baca is going to share with us in a little bit. But I just want to set this up. As I said earlier, that this is we're in a series, and it actually started out first. The overarching series is that grace comes first, and it really came out of this movie that has impacted so many people called I Can Only Imagine, which is the story of Bart Millard, who's a part of Mercy Me, which is a contemporary Christian band, and just his journey of pushing through life with his dad. His dad was abusive, but as we saw last week, we talked about the father-son relationship as we looked at the story of the prodigal son. And I just want us to see the reason why we're talking about these elements is because as a church, whether it's our church or it's a house church or it's a bigger church in our community, we're all trying to figure out what does this thing called faith look like in our contemporary context. And so a couple weeks ago, we talked about first this idea that it has to start with grace first in our relationships with people. And so we talked about this idea of even hospitality. And I used this quote from Peter Drucker, who is a nonprofit management guru, but Peter loved the church. He's gone now, but one of the things that Peter said is that our culture will eat our strategy for lunch. So we can say we love God and love others, but if our culture is such that when we have guests that show up, or we're in the community doing work, and that culture is antithetical to that, then whatever we say about loving God, people are going to judge us by that. And especially today in our culture, there is a real cynicism about Christianity, partly because, if you think about this, you are the Jesus that some people know. Maybe even look to your neighbor and say, you are Jesus to your neighbor, and tell them that, because it's like, oh my goodness, you know, what does that mean? Sometimes that's a good thing, but if you're getting cut off on the highway and you sort of do a cutoff again with a little rage, road rage, it's like that. Maybe just make sure you don't have a Linden Road Presbyterian sticker on your bumper. Well, I love Jesus, because we begin, and it's just the messiness of our culture. And then we talked a couple weeks, next week after that in this series, about the idea of, you know, what are you willing to risk to share the story? And you'll remember we talked about the four dudes that literally tore a hole through a guy's roof. And the messiness of that. And nowhere in the gospel narrative in Mark chapter 2 do we get the idea, if you were the homeowner, how happy were you that you now had this big, which had to be a pretty big hole to drop a guy down on a gurney. Or in just this idea, what are you willing to do? And realizing that your time and your talents and your treasures are at risk in that. And that God's going to ask you, when you begin relating with Jesus in a personal way, he's going to make things uncomfortable. When I think about Bob Solon's life and just the beauty of what he's offered to me in our many short conversations and even over these many last few weeks of just his, of all the things he should be thinking about, Linden Road and its future, I don't think is one of them. But at the same time, that was Bob's heart, because he was just a kingdom-oriented man. And so I just am blessed by that. And so part of this idea then the last couple weeks is really for us to understand that our identity, as last week we looked at the prodigal son, is to be reminded that the Jesus' identity as the son, the beloved son, with whom God is well pleased, is also our identity as sons and daughters of the great king. And that he expects us to live out of that. Now, this week is actually a two-part message. This week I want to make it really practical with talking about how do we deal with, what is this opioid thing all about? But I will tell you that in my conversations with many that are pushing through this, that it comes down to an identity issue. That because they don't know who they are as a person, as a person who's created in the image of a holy God, as a young man or as a young woman, or as an older man or an older woman, that then they look to alcohol or they look to drugs to sort of satisfy that need. And so the big idea this morning, and this is where I want us to spend some time, as Joe here in a moment will sort of unpack that, what it looks like locally, when we place our identity in anything other than Jesus, we are in need of redemption. And you can put whatever that is that's your thing. It could be your money. It could be your time. Then when we put those things in place of who we are, you think about a person who's a workaholic, then we realize that really Jesus doesn't want us to be a workaholic. And I suggested this a couple weeks ago, that just this idea, do you think Jesus was ever hurried? Do you think Jesus was ever busy? Did Jesus, he knew what his ministry was here on earth, and yet it's interesting, as we look at the stories, he picked and chose what he did. He didn't do for all. In fact, this week, as we were leaning into the end of Mark chapter 1, we realize that the disciples are all excited because of these amazing things that Jesus is doing. And they say, let's go do this. Everyone's paying attention to Jesus. And what does Jesus say? He says, we're going to go somewhere else. And it's like, okay, if you're in marketing, like some friends of mine are here in the building, that, you know, if you're doing stuff trying to build social awareness in the community, you would think that if you're getting some traction on an idea, the last thing you're going to do is leave here and go there. But that's exactly what Jesus did. But I think this morning, the thing we need to see, and we're going to spend some more time in it, I actually, is a, on your handout this morning, there's the Bible link for the link from Matthew for the Beatitudes, because that's where we're going to go next week. Because you see this idea of blessing, and I want to land on this as our last point before Joe comes, is that a blessing is not something we are given, it is a state of living. Can you say that with me? A blessing is not something we are given, is a state of living. And so as Joe will share, I want you to think about that, because there's a whole bunch of folks in Ohio that are living in a place where they don't understand the blessing that God is placed upon them in terms of who they, how they're supposed to live their life, how they're supposed to engage each day, the things that we take for granted, and there's a reason why that comes against them. You see, the word beatitude that we're going to look at next week actually means blessing. The Greek word is someone that someone is actually in an enviable position to receive God's incredible favor and grace. And I would argue that as a human being, that's where it starts first. And then as a Christ follower, it gets even deeper as you walk with Jesus and you're in your intimate moments with him, that you get to know who he is. But this morning, Dr. Joseph Baca is joining us. And he's, you know, I love it because I was asking him, because one of my first connections here to Linden Road was also this guy, Clark Benton. And Clark Benton and he share, they're both Rutgers men. So he actually did he graduated from New York University a few years ago and then did his medicine work at the Rutgers Medical School. And then actually lived in New Jersey until the mid-80s, and then moved to that state up north, as some of us talk about, to Michigan. Walt will be happy about that. And then went to Argentina, and then went to Maryland, and then to Cambridge, Ohio, and then moved here to Richland County in 1999. He's married and has two amazing children. But this morning I've invited him because of his heart and his passion. He serves at the Five Points Clinic downtown, but also has been involved in a number of conversations we've had in this community. So would you please give a warm welcome to Dr. Joseph Baca.
All right, next slide. We'll try to do this together with them. Ohio is usually pretty proud of being number one, but for 3 years in a row, we've been number two in opiate deaths in the country. West Virginia has beat us. Next slide. Out of the 88 counties, Richland County is number 16, so we're not doing too bad, right? Next slide. Someone dies from an opiate death in the United States every 8 minutes. So that means by the time we finish talking, 3 people will have died from an opiate death. But there's other things that are also involved. Alcohol, someone dies every 6 minutes. So 4 or 5 people are going to die from alcohol-related disease by the time we finish talking. And 25 or 30 are going to die from tobacco or nicotine-related deaths. So their addiction has a huge hold on a lot of things. When that pleasure center is not Jesus, it's going to end up in a lot of bad things. Next slide. These are the number of overdoses and the deaths that have been in Richland County in 2016, 17, and 18. You can see in 17 we really peaked. The overdoses went down last year significantly. A lot of the reasons why I'll talk about from an opiate response team that was set up in the area, but the deaths still keep staying up. Next slide. And you can see it's not just Mansfield City. 2/3 of the deaths are and the overdoses are from Mansfield City, but the rest are from the rest of the county. So this is not just a inner city Mansfield or even two houses down type thing. This is affects the entire county. Next slide. So far this year, our overdoses are down, but our deaths are still up, and there's actually probably just two more that are probably going to add to this. The totals are on a little bit of a delay because it does take a little while to get some of the autopsy results back. Next. Who doesn't this affect? I mean, we've had overdoses and people and accidentally in 2-year-olds that have gotten into their families' medications. We had 2 80-year-olds that overdosed at the same time because the medications they got were stronger than what they thought it was going to be. We've had neonates. 2 years ago, we had over 40 neonates that had to go through 2 to 3 weeks of the neonatal abstinence. So going through withdrawal, trying to find out, you know, what are they, trying to keep them up comfortable. Last year, we had a little over 30 in Mansfield. And then we're still even just finding out all the effects that it's going to have in utero. There are, I don't know if there's some here, but there are grandparents who all of a sudden have to take care of changing diapers that they haven't done in 50, 60 years because the parents are in jail, died, or whatever else. And there are families that are just totally split up by addiction. I mean, it's just whatever it is. If you figure that there were 357 overdoses that got reported to the police last year, knowing that there are now drug dealers that are sending out by 10 bags of heroin, get a free Narcan kit so that they can have a designated Narcaner. So people have said, hey, probably just 1 in 1,000 times that I overdose. So if that's the case, there were 350,000 hits of heroin last year, and there were over 600,000 the year before. That's a lot. When you think about, I mean, I don't know how many people have been broken in. I mean, most of the crime is going to be drug-related because it has such a strong hold on them instead of holding on to what they know really is needed. Next. I mean, you just can't trust your drug dealer, right? If you talk to the crime lab, every drug sample has an average of 3 different things in it. So whatever you think it is, it's not really there. Next. Heroin was found in only 6% of the samples last year. So when people were thinking that's what they were getting, most of it is fentanyl or a fentanyl derivative. 2 years ago when I started this, there were 7 different fentanyl analogs. At this time right now, Tony's found 13 different fentanyl analogs. And what they are is they get turned into fentanyl in your body, which is about 50 to 100 times stronger than heroin. But until they find out that it's illegal, it can get shipped in from China and Mexico. And then if it's not found that it turns into it, it can come in. So then it gets banned. And they find another new substance, because there's always going to be something. There are all kinds of different bath salts and synthetic marijuanas that have gotten people going so crazy. They've been having to be tasered 15, 20, 25 times just to get them under control and then put them into like almost like a coma for 2-3 days just to get things out of them. And there's deworming medicine. There's caffeine. There's Benadryl. There's meat tenderizer. There's all kinds of vegetable matter. I don't even want to think about what that is. Next slide. You can see this is 2 different ways of what a lethal dose of fentanyl is. So even just getting near something, you need to be careful. We had one police dog that needed to get Narcan just from sniffing. It just takes a small amount to be able to hit things. Next. No drug has been shown to be more addictive than the opiates or heroin. No one's been able to invent anything more. I pray to God that no one can get anything more addictive. Cocaine's right behind, tobacco's right behind, so is alcohol, but nothing just hits it stronger. Next. And then next. 3 weeks. They say it takes 3 weeks to develop a habit, and there is a true brain reason for that, because after 3 weeks, when you're bombarding the pleasure center of your brain, whether it be food, alcohol, heroin, whatever, you start seeing different chemical changes that go on. With the opiates, your brain is getting bombarded and it says, hey, I'm not going to make so many of those chemicals go across the pathway. And so that's why they keep needing more and more and more in order to get that same high. There's a true physical reason why that happens. And then it takes about 3 weeks, and then when they're going through withdrawal, they actually become hypersensitive to pain. So just touching like that can feel just like someone hit you with a hammer. There's a gene component, but there are lots of people that have the gene that's addictive gene that don't get addictive, and there's people that don't have the addictive gene that do become addicted. So it's not an excuse that you have the gene and that's your fate, especially when you have Jesus that's in charge of things. Next. And what happens too is also the brain also starts losing some of the inhibitions, and that's why people don't think logically. They lost some of their inhibitions with things, and that's an electrical pathway that needs to get retrained. So that the first thing they do when they start feeling bad is not reaching for something else, but it's reaching for the right thing. And that's going to take a while before that is able to get turned around. Next. When you stop, there's three different threes that go on. There's the physical withdrawal that goes for the first 3 days. That's sort of essentially emptying out every way that you can of your liquids. So it's crying, drooling, diarrhea, vomiting, sweating. I mean, just every way that you can do with that. The strong psychological craving really hits for 3 months, but it's not till people get to 3 years that we say that they're actually in remission. We used to say 1 year, but we just know that if we have you where you're not doing anything, at 6 months, about 75 to 80% of that brain chemistry is going to get turned around. If we use Vivitrol to try to help with things, you can get 80 to 85%. At 1 year, it's still 95%, so there's still 5%, give or take, that hasn't healed. And we really try to get people out to 3 years before we say that they're in remission. Next. And next. Last year, there were more than 1,000 doses of Narcan given in Richland County. The year before, there were more than 2,000 doses. And part of that is because some of these chemicals are requiring 10, 15, 20, 30, we've even gone up to 40 doses of Narcan in order to get things turned around. As people keep inventing all kinds of other crazier stuff, we've had all kinds of different other chemicals that have been added to things. People have figured out ways to be able to try to make the high last a little longer, get in a little quicker. It's just amazing. I've learned a ton of chemistry from a lot of the patients that I help at Five Point that are addicted. Next. But Narcan in our county starts the process of hope. There is just a whole Rube Ginsburg kind of set of dominoes of things that click in when someone has been given a Narcan and that report gets in. Next. There were 30 different agencies that came together to form the Richland County Opioid Board. That, to me, is a miracle. You have 30 agencies coming together, agreeing on something, and then getting something that really works. Next page. We were tasked with the Richland County Opioid Board. Although we do all addictions, we know that our money is and our grants are going to be able to come through if we're fighting the opiates. Next. And probably one of the biggest things that we have people coming actually from other states to take a look at is we started an opiate response team. And so after every overdose in Richland County or in Mansfield, once a week in the city and once a week for the rest of the county, they go out with someone who is from law enforcement, with a community health worker, which is sort of a social worker on sneakers, and someone from that's a treatment specialist. And this is where I think the key has been, because they've all been faith-based with that. Unfortunately, they can't go out on someone that has an active warrant. So that has eliminated probably about half the different responses they can have. Next. Since this was started in March of 2017, they've contacted 143 people. So that was 55%. But of the people they contact, this is the crazy number. It's been about 75% that are getting into treatment. And if you look at other places in the state, they're coming to us because they've been like 10, 15, 20%. No one has anywhere near this. And I'm sure it's because I've talked to people. They said that especially the person that comes out that's from one of the faith-based groups, and it's usually Project One or Starfish, I think they were here earlier, they just love on them. And they said they can't stop that. That's what has really drawn them to try to make a change. But the great part, next slide, is that it's not only just the people that overdose. We've had almost more people that were not the person that overdosed that have gotten into treatment. There were 65 targeted people, so the person went there and they said, hey, you really need to talk to my girlfriend or whoever else. There were family members of people. There were other people that were support network. And then 35 people that they left information, there's a hanger that they leave, ended up getting into treatment because of that. This, I don't think it gets a lot of publicity, but this has been one of the best things that I've ever been involved in. So keep going. Next slide. You can just see that 50 people have reached 30 days, and all the way down to 22 are now 120 days into treatment or longer. It's amazing. You don't think that there are many people that are in Richland County and using addictive services. Next slide. But you can see that last year there were 2,832 people that were in used addictive services for opiates, and over 4,600 for all kinds of addictions, most likely adding to that the alcohol, but also meth and crack have just made a huge comeback as people have been cutting down on the opiates. Next. There is the inpatient 16-bed treatment center that's being built near Catalyst, and they're also adding another up to 6 months sort of transition place for. Right now it's called New Beginnings, but they're actually going to have a male and a female New Beginnings separated from each other, which will be really, really smart, yes. And then this will be in the middle, so there will be an inpatient facility that's going to be there, and I will be the medical director of that, along with the rest of another team. Next. The road to recovery is not smooth and straight. One of the craziest stats that I've seen is that, and I've seen this over and over, is that it takes the average person that has been able to recover from addiction has had 7 relapses. That's a ton of grace. I was struck when I was talking to the chaplains because, you know, Jesus said, hey, how many times are you supposed to forgive someone? Said 7. Oh, wait, no, 70 times 7. So this takes a ton of grace, a ton of grace. It's been some of the toughest medicine I've ever had to do. Because we've had so many people that have come so far, they're almost there, and then life happens, and it takes the wrong turn. And it tears you up. Next page. Next slide. At what age does the brain usually stop developing? Next page. How about 25? So there's all these developing brains under age 25 that are being affected by a lot of different substances. And we know that if you start an addiction when you're before 25 and the brain is finished developing, you're going to have a much higher chance of being addicted later on. Alcohol, if you start before 14, you're going to be 14% are going to be drinking by 25. Marijuana, 38% by 25. Heroin, if you started at age 14, 71% are going to be addicted by 25. Versus 2% if they started after at 25. Next page. These are just going to be just some brief things because it's not just the opiates that are stealing life from people. It's not showing up real big. The next slide. It was just showing how many minutes you're losing every time you smoke, you take a drink, you take a hit of heroin or cocaine. Cigarettes, people are going to lose an average of 13% of their life, and so the average lifespan is going to go up to age 69. Next slide. Alcohol, they're going to lose an average of 29% of their life, and the average age of death is going to be 55 and a half. Next slide. Cocaine is even worse because of all the heart effects and the blood pressure. The average age of death is going to be 44 and a half. Next one, heroin. The average age of death is going to be 37 and a half. I think you can see, you know, most of the deaths that we see that are people in their 20s are related to addiction. And then even worse, the next slide. Amphetamines, the average age of death is going to be 37. It is just, we don't have a lot of treatments for people that are on amphetamines, and it is just rampant right now. Some of this is because of the medical community and some of the prescribing practices that we've done for people and put a lot of youngsters on Ritalin and on amphetamines, and it's when their brain's developing and not stopping it at the time that it should be. The same thing with the opiates, too, but things are getting turned on that. Next slide. Vaping also increases the effects of whatever it is that you're vaping by about 2 to 3 times. Next slide. And next. The 6? Yeah. That's 6. Substance abuse disorder are going to have a 6 time higher risk of suicide. And they're now finding that teens that are using marijuana are finding that they're a 6 time higher risk of schizophrenia when they're an adult. Next slide. I mean, the ultimate hopelessness is suicide, right? In 2017, we had a record of 22 suicides in Richland County. We had 17 in 2016. Last year, there's either 26 or 27. They're still waiting on some of the autopsy results with those, but 12 of them were from substance abuse. But the other thing that just hits you, for 3 years in a row since 2007, actually it's 2015, more first responders have died from suicide than in the line of duty. So police, fire, EMS, more are dying from suicide. A lot of it is just from the things that they're having to witness and see. Next. This is the big question. How in the world do you get an addict to change? And that's something we can try to be a part of, but until they realize that that pleasure center is needing to be filled by Jesus and that there's that emptiness that's there, it's not going to work. Next page. I've talked to some of the patients because I do some addictive treatment, trying to help get people turned into the right way and using medications for some of them. And I've asked them, you know, what are some of the things that, if you could say, were tips and things that helped you to succeed? And these are just so incredibly biblical, even though they didn't even realize it. Don't give up on me. Please support me. I mean, if that's not grace, that's grace. Demand honesty. Man, a little biblical too, huh? Don't give me cash. And don't trust me when I can't be trusted. And it's sometimes hard not to do that. Keep me busy. You know, just sitting and watching TV or playing a video game for 18 hours is not going to do the trick if you're going to want to do it. You know, he said all these things, all these good things, I want you to think on them. That's what I want you to do. Think about them. Don't let me be alone. And this is like right out of the Bible, right? Help me get, set, and achieve goals. And that getting to be able to achieve those goals is sometimes where just being alongside people can be a huge help. Get rid of the old. I mean, old paraphernalia, old drug contacts. A lot of times it needs to be getting out of your old apartment because it's not going to be a place that you're going to be able to succeed. Probably about a month ago, I had a lady who was living with her pimp, who was her drug supplier. She was not going to have any chance of success if she didn't get out of that environment. But then get in with the new. Get in with groups. Get in with sponsors. Exercise. And get in with someone that can be walking alongside you. I mean, can you imagine if I had every one of my patients having someone that would take a walk with them every day? I think my success would go up quite a bit. Next. The Opiate Board has set up a website, opiateaddictionrichlandcounty.com, and there are a lot of different resources, including if you need help, you know someone that needs help, being able to try to get some information for being able to help people. We're trying to add to the calendar and try to make this more useful website. So if you see things, you can let me know, and we'll keep working on trying to change it. And here, the last slide is, this is the key. What can we do? What can I do? All I can do is just toss out a bunch of different things, because every single person here is different. Every single person that's struggling with an addiction is also different and needs a different way to be able to try to turn things around. When I see a patient that comes in that's dealing with addictions, I just pray and pray and pray that I can find that hook that's going to be able to just be used by the Holy Spirit to be able to turn them around. So getting speakers or taking Narcan training. Right now there's one set up in June, but there'll be more that'll come onto the website. Because with the Narcan training is also just some more information like I had just given here. Consider foster care training. There are way too many kids that need foster care or even temporary foster care while their parents in jail or whatever else than there are available. And the same thing with helping out grandparents. There are several churches now plus area agency that are trying to get alongside grandparents who may not even have custody, so they can't even get financial help with different things. Now, I can't imagine right now being 60 and having to be changing a whole bunch of diapers, much less being 70 or 80 and all of a sudden having to change diapers and stay up all night and potty train and everything else that goes with that. Pray for everyone that's involved, from the first responders to the EDs to chaplains. And we need your prayers. Help support groups. A lot of times it's transportation that's needed. I know you have a group next door here that's doing both NA and AA, but one of the biggest issues we have is getting people to their meetings. We now have community workers that have been trying to work with that, but I can't imagine. I mean, if you had someone that you were picking up and taking back to a meeting every week, you're going to have a huge influence on their lives. And I think their chances of succeeding are going to go up even higher. We talked about 25 and under, how important that is. I mean, if you went to the, you know, just down the road to the high school lunchroom and tried to figure out which kids, where they're going to be in 5 years, I think you could probably have a good idea which ones may be in jail, if they're even in school. You talk to all our kids, they can tell you, yep, they're going to end up in jail, and a lot of times they are. But they'd be able to get kids and to be a mentor, to have a father figure or a grandfather figure is just absolutely huge. We're involved with a Saturday night meal ministry that's on the square, and we have two older couples that are always saying that they can't help serve because they're so frail and they can hardly make it down the steps, but they are grandparents to dozens and dozens of people that come on our Saturday night. And they just are, they just love, they're adored, and you don't have to have any special skills other than being a nice, kind person, and people are going to respond to that. And then to be able to provide a family for people. I mean, it's especially the widows and the orphans. I mean, Jesus and the Bible even just said that there's a special place in God's heart for the widows and orphans, and I mean, they need it. To be welcoming and gracious, and to remember that every person's different. So I just pray that you're going to be swirled around by the Holy Spirit's talking inside you and be able to be used for people that are struggling, whatever way it is, even if it's just getting on your knees every day and praying. So hopefully this was helpful and informative and gracious, and I appreciate your grace for me. So.
I mean, part of the reason why I wanted Joe to share is because, you know, the journey we're on as a church, the journey that churches are on all across the country, it's because the culture is not what it was. I hope those statistics were staggering to you to go, oh my goodness, and see how the brain chemistry and all of that, and then to see the result of the first responders, and then I start thinking about nickels and dimes, and so like maybe... to think there's 1,000 doses of Narcan that have been administered, what's the cost of that?
If you had to buy it yourself, it would be about $120.
Okay. What could we do in this community with that money if it wasn't being addressed to the opioid? Now, see, the problem with this is it all comes back to core longings. It all comes back to who we are, how we see ourselves. And so the role that we have as a church, this is the complication. This is the journey we've been on here in this place since I've been here, of trying to understand what does it mean to love God and love others. And the reality is, when you look at the statistics as he shared with us, and his heart, this idea, and what nailed me is when you shared with the chaplains, is this: the idea we were just beginning this series, and he says it all starts with grace. But you see, that's where it gets complicated, because define grace. What does that look like? I mean, can you talk about where in your own journey with maybe, a, you know, without revealing names, obviously, but just talk about how you've had to really bring that to bear in a whole new way. As someone who's professionally trained to rescue people, you know, through medical processes, I mean, what does that look like?
I did the county jail for 3 years in addition to the emergency department. So we see the worst of people, but now that I have patients that are coming in and telling me, you know, what, how much they've used, what got triggers, all the triggers that sent them all the wrong way. And I've had many people that have been way more than that, 7 times. And we've had people on 13, 14, 15, 20th times of relapse. And even though so many times I want to give up, and so many times when I've talked about that Narcan classes and training, and people have said, hey, why don't you just stop that Narcan, just let them die. It's they're a person that God created, and my whole idea of how much grace I can give has been incredibly challenged to be able to give that much grace, but also still try to have just that touch and that truth and that honesty that's there too, and try to hold people accountable, because that's important too for people to be able to recover. So it's not just grace, which can end up being enabling, but it's grace, but also at times just saying, I mean, this is it, you got to do this. You know, you can't go back to living with your tent. It's not going to work. Or wherever else that you're living. Or even to even say, you can't go back to mom and dad, because you know that they're both about to be arrested soon too. So, I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. Does anybody else have a question that you'd like to ask? Well,
I will leave the politics of marijuana out. But the thing is that marijuana is not marijuana. That's part of things too, because there are different components. There's a difference whether you're smoking things, vaping things, trying to just get out certain amounts of the oils that may have different things that can help. But that's a whole nother political end that I will leave separate. Church.
Marijuana is a gateway drug.
Marijuana, just like a lot of other things, can be hitting you so that you can get something that's going to be stronger and stronger down the line. Whether it's marijuana, alcohol, even cigarettes, start that need that's going down the line.
Yeah, I will say from my time in the jail, the poll that I take every time I'm in with a group of guys, how many of you is marijuana part of your history? And there isn't a hand that doesn't go up. So there is a correlation there, I think, at least in the practical sense.
We looked last year, more than 95% of the psychiatric admissions, the patient had marijuana in their drug screen. So that's not what's here. There's definitely a component that's adding to you, just not being able to think right. And you can see it goes down to the brain chemistry where things are being made. Sorry, first. Sorry.
So, for argument's sake, can I say, is there a difference between medical marijuana and
Well, there's a few different things with that. One is that if you buy marijuana on the street, most likely it's not just pure marijuana. It's going to have other substances with it. And marijuana is not marijuana. If you look in Colorado, what they sell can have anywhere from 1 to 2 milligrams of the THC up to 25 and 30 milligrams of the THC. So you don't even know what you're getting in with that. The idea of medical marijuana is to be able to get out the ingredients. It's not for smoking, I mean, because smoking is still going to have its issues with things, but to be able to tease out the ingredients the same way we've teased out the digoxin and different other things from plants, and be able to say this amount of this medication is what you're going to be used and given. But that's, again, a whole other politics of everything. Does that answer your question?
That's community action center for people that, you know, may have an addiction, but they're also learning other things. Parents need skills and maybe skills skills and job. It's kind of a counseling. It's counseling and helping with the drug problem.
Yeah, we are at Five Points and among other places involved with the CAC, which used to be the Old People's Hospital.
Right.
And they have people that it's essentially, instead of serving jail time in jail, they're sort of mandated to be there, and then they're trying to get skills. They're good as, if they have an addiction issue, they're going to classes every day and being able to get things turned around. And we have had, I've had quite a few people from CAC that have been able to springboard out and be successful. But again, it's where they go from there that's going to be super important, because the ones that go back to their old ways, it's just, you might as well not even have spent your time in there.
Do you have some kind of a support group yourself that you can find best direction for?
Well, do I have a support group? My family, my Sunday home church, and our Saturday night group, and actually my Five Points group. There are three other nurse practitioners and myself that have known each other for 20 years from Shelby and on. People can use it. Firemen can use it. Police can use it. EMTs can use it. We have set up, actually part of what I helped set up was an EAP, so a place where they can, where first responders can go. That's through Catalyst, but it does not, we don't talk to their employer, but we're able to get them counseling in a separate place from Catalyst. And we have several people now that are being helped because of that. So that I can always use, and I know my colleagues too, all of us that are in this battle can always use prayer support and people just saying, how's it going, and helping come alongside us. So, because we're all in this together. I mean, most of the car break-ins and everything else are all drug-related, right?
Anyone else? Okay.
You mentioned one state country is the program. Do you work with any employers to try to have job fairs to go to? Like you said, in the list of things you do, you need to get away from your environment, get out into the community. So is there a place for them to go to?
There are several employers that have been gracious, literally, and being able to help people. NextGen and Spherium through some of theirs, and also StarTech, and have been really good at being able to try to help transition people. And that's where our community health workers try to get things hooked up, because getting a job is one of the things that we work hard on trying to get people to be doing, but they got to get their recovery and get their triggers set up first before they're going to suddenly go out and be getting a whole bunch of extra money that they hadn't had for a while.
Ashley?
There is a problem with unemployment, and part of that, a piece of that, is the fact that individuals who they qualify for the job, but they do not pass the drug test. So therefore, they're not hired. Now, do you have a partnership with companies or employers who, whenever this comes up, that they can really refer to you, or is that a private issue that you're breaking confidentiality? And is that a way helping individuals who are in a situation where they really can't help themselves, although they want to participate and become part of a working population? And if that is the case, do you have, it's kind of a multifaceted question, do you have, show the outcomes that people can come to and be an entry level before they make the big step to making kind of commitment to a recovery program? But do you have like offices or different places, in obscure places that they can feel safe to come and identify themselves as having a problem like that? And then they can be referred to the proper facility.
Yeah, we do that at Catalyst. We do that helping with our office. As a matter of fact, one of the links on the website is I have an employee who has an issue, and it goes through some resources. And actually, this Thursday, I'm going to be talking to the Richland County Safety Council because they're actually trying to address the same question. I don't think they have an idea of what they have some idea locally in their own companies how much the issue is and what's available. But hopefully, it'll be a talk similar to this, but not being able to have all the right emphasis that I can do today to be talking to the Safety Council this Thursday because they are very interested in that same question. So there's hope at the end of that's coming up soon when people are addressing that.
So before I pray for Joe for us, on your handout, the link for the opioid board, and I would encourage you, there's a couple things you can do. This conversation is going to be on our podcast. It'll eventually be on our Facebook page later this week. Please share that, point people to it, because I think, first of all, we need to start with prayer, and I think that's the movement that I think we're so encouraged as we've talked this whole crazy thing with what Paul Lintern and a few other pastors, including myself, and it's just been crazy how God is using that, and I think that's where it starts. And so, again, that's a promotion that, you know, find out. You got an email yesterday, and there's a list at the back where you might go later this week to just join with another congregation. And then we need to be praying for these folks. And so let me do that for us right now.